It's October 17th, 2011. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for finer living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. What are we calling this episode?
Did I have something?
No, I put something in there.
Shall we play a game? This is actually because it's the Alan Show.
I wanted you to read it in the War Games computer voice.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Shall we play a game?
That was surprisingly well done. I was not expecting that.
Greetings, Professor Falcon. Yeah, I don't know. I did my best.
Did you
notice I changed it on the about page for our show.hellyeah.com website? Our intro music is lovingly composed by Clarence Johnson. And if you shake him, beautiful music falls out.
Yes. many thanks to Clarence. Some definitely kicking intro music that we've really been enjoying. We switched on, like, I think episode 3 or something, we switched over. And I have not looked back.
pretty very awesome talented man.
Yes.
So today, what was the agenda? So before we get started, I would like to point out that I'm a little groggy. I have either some sort of like really gnarly cold rolling through or something. I don't know. I don't have a fever, but I feel like hot buttered ass that got run over by a truck. So
you sound okay. So
yeah. Well, the booze helps.
So before we get started, though, I told you I had something leading off here. So we talked about new TV last episode. And I had a little free time a couple days ago. Thought I'd check out a little new TV. I watched Last Man Standing. and it didn't suck entirely.
Oh, you're such a liar.
I did not watch the pilot. I watched episode 2. Okay? So here's the thing. All of the gender, role, humor, all that stuff doesn't work and is not funny at all.
Correct.
However, there are still a few funny moments.
Okay.
I'm not sure that those funny moments are worth actually watching the show for.
Is it like, 30 minutes of gender and heteronormativity and like really stupid?
It's like 15 minutes of that and 15 minutes of assorted other types of jokes, right?
Wow.
So, and Tim Allen actually plays the role fairly well. And
he's playing an idiot. He's playing himself. It can't be that difficult.
And they did make one physical humor joke where a guy gets his head stuck in a banister. Always fun and always hilarious.
50 times you saw it.
Yeah. And I was reading a review about Last Man Standing, and they were saying if you listen closely to the laugh track, you can actually hear the moments where people are decidedly not laughing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's you can great. Hear the moments where like they're supposed to laugh and they're clearly not. there are actually, as I said, there were a few times when I actually physically laughed, right? Not just thinking in my head, oh, that's kind of funny and clever. I actually physically laughed about 2 or 3 times in a half an hour, which is not bad, right?
You've already demonstrated that you're not qualified to watch this show because you like that stupid Santa movie that he's in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Anyway.
You're tainted.
Not terrible, but not good.
Anyway. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah.
I am disappointed.
Yes. Speaking of being disappointed in things, though, onto the real news here. Tell me about BlackBerry.
So there was a multi-day outage where the BlackBerry mail network wasn't working correctly. And I'm not really sure if they've actually released any details about it or not, but there's a website called dataoutages.com, and there's a mailing list, and there's a lot of BlackBerry Enterprise. The BlackBerry Enterprise server software is called a BEZ, and there's a lot of like BEZ admins that frequent that list and report things that they're seeing. So it's kind of interesting. But long story short, service wasn't working reliably at all. Some people were not able to get any messages. Other people were getting very, very little messages.
And this is worldwide?
Yeah, it seems to be global. I think there were some South American countries, like Latin American countries, that were especially just really heavily hit.
Okay.
And then a lot of places it was just kind of poking along. And I also don't know if like the details on it, I haven't really looked at, but there's always a possibility, like just because of how the BlackBerries work, people that even don't use the BlackBerry Mail service and just have the device and use the data connection. I don't know if like the Google Gmail app for the BlackBerry works. My father uses that. I should probably ask him how his service was working last week. But I know all he ever does with his BlackBerry is he uses the Gmail app to go directly to Gmail. He doesn't use like a BlackBerry.net email address or the push mail or anything like that. So
sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty terrible. And it was 3-day outage, and all the operators like started freaking out and like, you know, we've got all these angry customers, and these things aren't working. And the one of the many CEOs at BlackBerry, you know, they have like two.
Three, yeah. Yeah. It's like a co-CEO thing. Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, that's asinine. And secondly, they posted like, I don't know, the fat one gave this long rambling apology and looked really sad, and we were supposed to feel sorry for him. I don't know, but
you compared this to the Netflix CEO video.
BlackBerry let you down. Did you ever watch the episode of King of the Hill where Alamo beer, there's like soap in the beer, and so people are getting sick?
No.
And Peggy ends up working as a because she's kind of bilingual. She ends up working like the Spanish customer support line for Alamo Beer, and she's like taking messages and taking calls from people in Mexico, and she's like writing down in a notebook, and she's like, vomitando, the diarrhea. and then there's like this really embarrassing video, or it's actually not embarrassing in this case because it's the CEO of Alamo, and he's like by the fire with his kids and their dog. He's like, Alamo Beer has let you down. We are really sorry. Blah blah blah. So it's kind of like that, except it's, you know, kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah,
yeah.
So there's a great post out there that I found at some point in the past week or two, where someone said someone wrote a "What Netflix Could Have Said," which was basically just a rewording of everything Reed Hastings said, but worded to sound like we are an awesome company that is doing more awesome things, as opposed to we really messed up.
yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, every time Zuckerberg has to talk, like he's not someone that should be on stage talking to people. Like, I mean, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of him personally, but just like seeing him present on stuff, it's always kind of embarrassing because he's just not good at it.
Right.
And I don't know if it's something he's going to grow into or what, but it's also possible that he just shouldn't be out in front because,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But so they're giving away like 12 free apps to people. And this is, you know, the big headline here is that the BlackBerry has 12 apps. So people that have the BlackBerry should be really excited.
Well, this sounds like Sony giving away free software to compensate for an outage.
Yeah, but they gave away like downloadable content for games and stuff too, and like mini games, right? Like, I don't know what
it was actually two full games on both the PlayStation proper and on the portable.
Oh,
so you got two full games on each, but it's from a selection of like six Sony published games, many of which had sequels coming out.
I'm sure it wasn't really, you know, hurting them any to give them one.
But these 12 free apps are anything, or it's a specific set of apps?
I think it's probably a specific set.
Okay.
I mean, the BlackBerry hasn't really been relevant for like 3 years. I don't follow them at all. And
used to be way into the BlackBerry stuff, right?
Loved a BlackBerry. It used to be a really great device, but it hasn't really done anything in years. Like, it still can't even do IMAP.
Wow.
Did you know that? Like, if you have a BlackBerry device and you have an IMAP mail server, you're boned. Like, the only thing you can do, their IMAP support for the they have two different sides, right? Their enterprise side, which uses a Bez, the BlackBerry enterprise server, which talks to like an Exchange or Lotus Notes server, and then there's the biz side, the BIS, the BlackBerry internet service, which will talk to, like, you know, your POP account and your IMAP accounts, but it doesn't do like a full proper IMAP folder sync. All it does is like fetch your inbox via IMAP.
Wow.
So if you like update, like if you read a message in your IMAP mail client and it gets marked as read, your BlackBerry won't necessarily see that. Like, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
And this is in the built-in email client on the BlackBerry. You could do IMAP through an app or something, right?
You know, there are apps that claim to do it, but, you know, then you're also like paying to run another application that's not hooked into the BlackBerry push delivery system. Like, it doesn't really make any sense to do that, I don't think. I mean,
right.
I saw one that someone had released, and it looked like crap, and like most BlackBerry applications. Like, a lot of them just look terrible.
Well, and the BlackBerry push email is the BlackBerry feature, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to have, like, a push mail service that can't do, like, a simple IMAP folder sync, it's not like it's a hidden protocol that's not documented. Like, you know, anyone can do IMAP.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, well, I know what the reason is. They want you to buy a Bez so that you have to have everything on Exchange.
Right.
And even though they like give, I mean, they have like this micro Bez or something they give away if you've got like fewer than five users. So what, now I'm going to go out and buy Microsoft Exchange and a Windows server so that I can,
for your personal email.
It's so stupid. Like,
yeah. Well, they're not selling to people with personal email, or they're not selling to people who want personal email on the device.
No kidding. And that's why they're screwed. Because right now they're not even remotely relevant. Like,
yep.
They are really struggling. And I think at this point they should be looking for someone to buy them, because the only people that are going to be interested in giving RIM any money are going to be people that want to protect intellectual property or copyright. Like, they have some sort of patent reason to even associate with them. I mean, the biggest customer in the United States is the federal government, and after that, you know, everyone's moving away.
Sure.
I don't know. Like, I don't know anyone that's like doing big BlackBerry deployments.
Well, and this outage probably doesn't help things at this point.
No, yeah. They look like idiots. They haven't been able to make a device. Like, they release a tablet with no email and no software. They were supposed to be like a serious business device, and it had like, you know, Ridge Racer. Like,
well, Ridge Racer's on everything, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't know which end is up. And like, those two CEOs, I don't know what they're doing, but
sure. Yeah,
I have no confidence.
So how do you compare this with during the British protests, I don't know if this is still going on, but when it was getting really heated up, people were saying, oh, all the young people are using BlackBerry Messenger to organize this stuff. Are young people using BlackBerry Messenger?
Yeah, I think, well, the BlackBerry, you can get a BlackBerry really super cheap. I mean,
I
think there's, I mean, BBM, BlackBerry Messenger, is probably one of the biggest features of the BlackBerry. So the reason for that being, and especially in a country like the UK, is that the fees on text messaging is so high.
Right.
So, and that's another thing that the US operators are starting to figure out too, is that they can basically just absolutely destroy you and like charge you obscene amounts of money for something that actually helps their network. Like, if you send a text message instead of making a phone call, you are actually saving them hundreds of dollars annually in infrastructure costs and spectrum.
Sure.
Because it's less resources to accommodate that, but they're charging you 10 times as much to do it. It's completely stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at any conference and see measure the likelihood of being able to send a text message versus the likelihood of being able to make a phone call there.
No, and I don't even like... Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that, well, see, even like, I don't like making phone calls around other people. Like, I don't like talking on the phone.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't like doing it with an audience.
Well, but that would be an argument for why they should charge you more for it, though, because it is of more value to you.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, good thing that Apple released their iMessage stuff.
Sure.
I mean,
I've started to get iMessage from people now that 5.0 is actually out,
yeah.
which I do like. Yeah.
I like it, too.
I have unlimited texting, but... I'd like it anyway.
The only reason I have unlimited texting is because I was getting absolutely destroyed by paying obscene amounts of money for text messaging every month.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's, well, because and with unlimited, you can start using it for other things too. You can use it for Twitter or for if this then that.
Yeah. Yeah. You do that. Or I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with SMS that are pretty great. But I mean, for Twitter, I would rather use the data app.
Yeah. So the one, and actually this transitions well into our next topic, but. A use that actually people have been using text messages for Twitter lately is Siri on the iPhone 4S can only do Twitter posts if you do it through SMS, but it can do Twitter posts if you do it that way. You can tell it to send an SMS to the Twitter address, and then it will post your Twitter posts for you.
I would imagine that they're going to have support for Siri in some other like third-party API, right?
Yeah, I think that's coming.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the iPhone 4S overall, though. Came out in this past week.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were expecting the iPhone 5. I think I probably was.
Yes. By the holiday of this year, I think I was definitely expecting iPhone 5.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess that the 4S is solid. It's a good upgrade. It's actually something I've considered moving to from the 4.
Sure. Yeah. And the what I think probably is the top billing feature here is Siri, this audio-based personal assistant that can do some really smart things and is restricted only to the iPhone 4S, which I think I've said in the past, I think is kind of weird.
Yeah, some people say it's like a CPU dependency, and then as you pointed out once, it's doing so much of it server-side on the network. To be honest, like the only reason I haven't ordered a 4S yet for myself is because I don't think I should stay with AT&T, and I got to figure out where I'm going to go.
Right.
Their service just sucks in my neck of the woods. Like it's just.
I don't think it's just in your neck of the woods.
Well, no. I mean, have you seen like some of the people that are posting like their results on the because it has a newer way to do the data service? Uh-huh. So people are posting like these screenshots where they're getting like you know. Couple megabit per second, but
wow.
I struggle to like break modem speed on my on my iPhone 4.
Yeah, yeah,
it's really dumb.
Yeah, I mean I've the other side of it, I've heard good things about Sprint, but mostly just because their unlimited data is more or less actually unlimited data, which is kind of nice.
But again, I have ubiquitous Wi-Fi. I have an unlimited data plan from AT&T, and the only reason I keep it is because I don't want to give it up because they won't sell it to me if I drop it.
Right, right.
But I mean, on the other hand, like I've never used more than 200 megs a month.
Right. Yeah. Well, the my argument for it is when you have unlimited data, your use patterns of it can change. Like you can start you'd feel okay with streaming a video on the go if you wanted to. Right.
Oh well, hell, I'd love to be able to even do that, but I can't do it anyway.
Right. You need the bandwidth first. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I can stream like you know that ASCII Star Wars.
Yes.
Have you seen that ever? Like,
you've
got a Telnet server and you can Telnet, like, you know, some site on like a high port. It does like this ASCII Star Wars. It's awesome.
I had an app they didn't call them apps back then, but for the Palm M500, which I owned, there was a program you could install that did ASCII Star Wars, complete with MIDI tones and everything.
That's cool. I had a Palm.
It was excellent.
I had several Palms. I had a Newton.
Sure.
I've had a Newton. Let me see what I have. I had a Newton 100 and a Newton 110. And no, I didn't have the 110. I had a Newton 100 and a Newton 130. And then I had a Palm 5, a Palm 3, a Palm 3C. And I think that. Oh, and then I had a Handspring. I had a Handspring device. Well,
then you moved away from the typical Palm line or like the typical Palm interface at that point. Handspring was still Palm, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it became Palm again or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
they had like that goofy radio. I had like a wireless data service for my Handspring using that stupid modem thing that you clamped on.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. The M500 had that as well, though I didn't own a modem, but the M500 was at a weird time. It was like the last black and white screened Palm device and the last bad Palm device.
It is unbelievable looking back, like between that and the iPhone 4S.
Yeah.
Like
how far we've come.
It boggles the mind. And yeah. Like I have the that Apple design book. It's like a collector's item, I guess now, but it's a book of like Apple prototypes over the years. And like, you know, they had a device that was shaped kind of like a Newton and had a virtual assistant in it. That was, you know, kind of like Siri, you know, with that agent bow tie thing. Do you remember this? I'll see if I can find it.
They tried a bunch, or they did a lot of sort of concept video type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. About this.
And this was like, you know, in the early 90s.
Yeah. There's a, there's a video somewhere that where it's like some sort of desktop message pad where it's helping a college professor organized, I think at Berkeley, a Berkeley professor organized all of his notes for a lecture.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a lot of that stuff. And it's interesting to see it come back in the mainstream with the 4S here and with Siri.
And this is actually, you know, the hardware can actually deliver it.
Yes.
Like the Siri stuff's great. I mean, like, and it's even got a personality.
I've not played around with Siri personally yet. They apparently did some really interesting things with it for the corner cases, for the times when you ask about things that aren't the normal, make me a calendar appointment for whatever, or call this person or whatnot.
Yeah. Like, do I look fat?
Yeah. Yeah. my absolute favorite of these, and I opened up a few here, so I'm going to roll through them, but my favorite conversation with Siri, the person asks, who is on first? Siri responds, correct. Person asks, who is on first? Siri responds, right, that's the man's name. Person asks, who is on first? Siri responds, that's right.
That's awesome.
It's so good. And so at the same time, this was clearly implemented directly by a human, right? It's not like Siri has some knowledge that this is a comedy sketch and that she should play along. That would be amazing, but that's...
Well, do you know? I mean, I don't...
That is almost certainly not the case. This is way too clever for that to be automatically determined.
Yeah, but how many Easter eggs do you think they've got?
Lots. I mean, I think this is what Apple engineers spent their weekends on for the past half a year. It's finding these corner cases. But, and Easter eggs. But even knowing that someone directly went in and accounted for this particular case, it definitely makes me more excited about Siri.
Oh, absolutely. It's just the level of polish that, you know, we would expect, but other people are going to find even more.
This is the kind of thing Apple does really well. Is add that sort of personality and polish. No.
Any other like weird one-off queries that they're getting, like they're able to like review those, right?
Sure.
So they're going to add more. So like as people come up with like even weirder things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Google does some of that stuff. Like if you type into Google the loneliest number,
I've never done that.
You can even multiply it by two if you want.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So loneliest number is treated as a mathematical quantity, right? So Google does some of that, but Siri takes it to a bit of a different level in kind of adding on this assistant-like personality, where it seems like if you sort of glance at it, seems like she's got this unique personality of her own. Some other things here on this wonderful website that you found and put in the show notes, which I'm going to call STSS.
That's good.
Yeah.
And it's basically stuff that Siri says.
How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? This is Siri actually has some good answers to this question, but in this instance, she did not, or she led the person into a confusing direction. She responds, it depends on whether you are talking about African or European woodchucks.
You know what that's from, right?
It's from Monty Python, which
correct.
There is a use case, or it's Siri also, if you ask Siri about an unladen swallow, Siri will respond on that. But actually on that one, Siri doesn't respond directly. Siri just throws it into Wolfram Alpha, and because Wolfram Research are a bunch of geeks, Wolfram Alpha interprets that query correctly. Right?
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, so it says that it depends on whether you're talking about European, African or European woodchucks. The person then says, European woodchuck. Siri responds, I found 8 European restaurants fairly close to you.
That's great.
Yeah. Another one here. What can I help you with? Person responds, I think I just killed someone. Siri responds, is that so? Person responds, yes. Siri responds, I thought so. Person says, what should I do? Siri says, okay, here's what's on your calendar.
did you ever play the not I don't know if you'd really call it playing, but there was an old program called Eliza?
Yes. Yeah. On DOS.
Well, yeah, but
originally
it was
DOS,
for,
I guess.
Originally for Unix. I think written for
It was really some research project, I guess, and then it was implemented on
ported everywhere.
It
kind of reminds me like some of the circular psychoanalytical stuff you can get into.
And Siri does use a lot of those tricks from what I could see, less so than Eliza did. A lot of times Eliza would say things like, what do you mean by that?
I mean, the whole point of Eliza was supposed to be a psychoanalyst. Like, it was supposed to get you just to talk. Like, it didn't really do any analysis.
It did some. Like, if you told Eliza, oh, that's right, I didn't actually use Eliza. I used a spinoff of Eliza called Billy.
Oh.
And it would do things like if you said, the president of the United States is Bill Clinton. This shows you how long ago I used this. It would take note of that. And then if you asked it, who is the president of the United States, it would respond, Bill Clinton.
Oh,
so it would learn things like that. But it would also use a lot of tricks to obscure the fact that it really didn't understand exactly what you were asking it. So it would ask clarifying questions that it didn't really need to ask, or it would make sort of general statements like, oh, that's interesting, or, you know, that sort of thing. But Siri is designed to be helpful. So Siri actually has to do something real with anything, well, with almost anything you give it, because the whole point is your interaction with Siri should end in some sort of actual action.
Yes. And it should be something that you wanted it to do.
Right. such as, I need to hide a body. Siri responds, what kind of place are you looking for? And gives a list. Reservoirs, metal foundries, mines, dumps, and swamps.
It's only a matter of time before some fun hater like starts making like a big stink about this and is like, oh, they're trying to get you to kill people. It's like those idiots with the GPS that end up in fields.
if you ask Siri about anything to do with sex, it responds with a list of escort agencies.
That's
yes.
Classy. I wonder if they were like escort agencies in someone's phone book.
I think it's it appears to be coming from some local directory, like all the other. If you ask about pizza or whatnot, so. But yeah, there's definitely they've made it more than it needed to be, which is good, which is very good. It has a personality of its own.
Huh? Escorts? Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. just in case. You know, I mean.
yeah.
But the overarching thing on this, though, is I'm wondering how much people will actually find it useful, right? Like, it's fun to play around with. It's fun to show your friends. It's fun to
I find it concerning that, like, if people are using this all the time, like, is Siri going to get confused when, like, you know, you leave a meeting and there's, like, a half a dozen people outside, like, doing their action items for the next meeting? Like, is it possible, like, that's going to be kind of a problem?
You mean, like, multiple people speaking at once?
Yeah, like, is it going to pick up other people?
Oh, I'm not sure. I wonder if it learns your voice or learns to prefer detecting you or something. But you can also design, what's actually really nice about it is you can pick it up and use it like you were talking on the phone to someone as well.
Okay.
And then it's pretty much guaranteed to just pick up your voice, right?
That's true.
And you could use it in a noisier environment, and you can not look crazy in public, which is always nice.
That is nice.
I mean, that's a big problem with voice-controlled interfaces. You don't want to pull out your iPhone and start saying commands to it, at least with the previous voice control interface. Because
have you noticed?
What's that?
Have you noticed? I'm sorry if I keep interjecting.
No worries.
Have you noticed that there are fewer people walking around like with the Bluetooth headsets?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't think anyone ever thought those were a good idea.
Well,
I mean, I don't think anyone who ever, you know, knew what was up thought those were a good idea.
No way.
You're a Bluetooth headset user?
Well, I have been. Like, it's not something I make a, you know.
There's a fantastic Wired magazine cover with Brad Pitt. Have you seen this?
No.
Brad Pitt is wearing a Bluetooth headset. And it shows him this like in this great, you know, suit with an off angle, stylish Brad Pitt, and the caption is, "If he can't pull it off, you can't either."
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. I don't like, you know, walk around wearing it.
And so in a vehicle or while you're working or something like that, I can understand it. But the sort of walking down the street talking to no one, it's always. I understand how it's useful, but it's always seemed a little ridiculous.
You know, I prefer having like a pair of headphones with an inline mic on them.
Yes. Yeah. Although then you really do look like a crazy person.
No, because people see the headphones.
Yeah, but people don't know. People don't know.
Really? Like,
no matter how many people have used iPhones and know and realize that the microphone is in the headphones, the majority of people do not know.
Man,
I mean, you underestimate. There are so many people out there that do not know how an iPhone works.
See, it's like I like using it, especially around the house. I'll use a Bluetooth.
Oh,
headset.
I love that. Yeah.
And then like, because my new car has one built in. Like, it's in the Volkswagen Bluetooth kit. It's pretty nice. Like, if you're listening to a CD or your phone or something while you're driving around, and you get a call, it will like actually it dims out the audio. It's like,
right,
and then it
right.
brings the call in, which is kind of cool.
Well, I guess I take issue with a certain brand of Bluetooth headset user, namely the person that leaves it in all the time.
Yeah, that, I don't do that.
That has it there at the ready, and usually doesn't actually get that many phone calls on it.
Yeah, those guys look like D-bags. I'm sure that I've left mine in for a little too long, but I haven't, like, you know, camped out with it all day.
Right, right. Anyway, but I'd agree. Use is definitely declining on that front.
So. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate though. Like, I don't know.
And maybe the iPhone earbuds have something to do with that. Like, maybe
I think so.
Yeah, people are using that interface instead, or at least people in the know are.
Yeah, the iPhone's really kind of like indispensable, isn't it?
It is. It is.
especially if something like Siri, where it's, you know, it makes it really hard to think of moving to something else. I mean, Apple's really done some pretty cool stuff there. I don't expect anyone else to have anything quite as good as Siri for at least a year.
Yeah, as I was saying, it remains to be seen how useful Siri is in practice, right? Like,
sure.
If people find that it's not socially acceptable to be talking to a virtual assistant on their phone in the grocery store, then people probably aren't going to use it. And if it's just a like demo to your friends every once in a while, if they haven't seen it type of feature, then it's not going to become indispensable for them. But at the same time, it is possible that it'll be the de facto way for a lot of people to create new calendar appointments, to find a restaurant nearby, to call somebody. It just becomes the sort of the easy access interface for the phone.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is, you know what's really great about this is that it totally backdoors Google.
How so?
Well, because if you have Siri doing the lookups, they can change what Siri is looking at server side.
Sure.
So instead of like fumbling around, because lately I've had a trouble with on my iPhone, if I go do like a Google search and I want to use like Google Local or whatever, it'll end up like returning stuff that's nowhere near me. And if I go to like the little local tab or places tab, it wouldn't like always render right.
Mm-hmm.
But something like Siri, I can be like, you know, I'm looking for Italian food within walking distance, and it will just tell me. I don't have to go to Google and thump it in and then wait for it to return results and then, you know, spin my wheels through that. Like, I kind of like the idea of just being able to like talk naturally to it and have it return something that's useful. And if that happens to be from doing a Google search on the other end, that's fine. But if some way down the road that's not the best option, then yeah, they can just be doing it somewhere else. And I don't have to make a choice. I don't have to care where it's coming from.
I think keyword-based search in general is probably going to be replaced by something better eventually.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of time until we have the technology and the understanding of natural language or whatever we end up using instead of keywords to make that a reality. And I think Siri is definitely a good step in that direction. So, cool stuff. All right. Speaking of other indispensable things,
Instapaper.
Instapaper. Tell me about Instapaper.
Instapaper 4 was released today.
Oh, wow. Yep. Timely.
Yes.
we've been delaying this for several weeks, talking about Instapaper, and it worked out for the better.
Yeah, today's a great day to talk about it. So Instapaper is a web service that lets you take an article. Like, people routinely, as you're like clicking, one of the big problems with the web and the internet in general is that you're constantly being fed stuff.
Yes.
And a lot of that is things that you want to be able to read, or you want to read later, or you want to be able to really pay attention to and focus on. Sometimes the formatting sucks, sometimes it doesn't. But being able to kind of shelve things for later so that they're just not bugging you, because I don't know, it's very easy to have, you know, 24 tabs open in your web browser of things that you intend to read later, and then something happens at some point and you lose them all. but something like Instapaper, what it does, you can pass a web page to it and it will save it for you in a very easy to read plain text format. So if you're looking at a really terribly designed site or something with like a bazillion flash ads and Java applets and blinky crap and scripts and popovers and all that nonsense, sending it over to Instapaper to read it later will let you not only read it later, but also just read it as it should be, like as the article would
just
appear.
Text.
It's kind of like the
text of the article. Yeah, and images,
like, it's not like a raw ASCII text of like a page. It's not like that, but it is the actual article or the thing that you want to read and nothing else.
Yes. Yeah.
And it does a really good job of that. Okay. Just using it as a place to like stash and archive articles is fantastic. It's absolutely worth buying the iOS applications. You can use it for free on the web. But I would recommend people buy it because the iOS client, as it were, I think offers a very superior experience to the web-based version in that it's very easy to have it cache several, you know, all of your recent things that you've pushed into it. Mm-hmm. And it's great for like on the bus.
And it's a very well thought out app too. It's well designed.
It's lovely.
Lots of really insignificant tweaks that improve the reading experience. But at the end of the day, the reading experience is that much better because of all those little tweaks.
Absolutely. And one of the really critical things about it, I think, is that a lot of third-party application developers have also added support for Instapaper into their stuff. So like in Reader, for example, my mobile RSS reader I use, if I'm reading something there and I want to make sure that I see it later, I can send it to Instapaper from Reader.
Nice.
That's awesome. And like you can also do things... like inside browsers, like I use the Dolphin web browser, which is awesome, by the way. We should talk about that sometime, too. Have you used that before?
No.
It's way, way, way cool. I love it.
Huh.
You can do gestures with it, and I like its tab control better than Safari. But
okay.
It's worth looking at. But Instapaper's great, and there was a really good article written today. Merlin Mann put it on 43 folders about Instapaper and like intentional reading that I thought was really good. But the ability just to shelve articles, I think is fantastic. I don't, you know, it can be tempting, I think, to use it as like a temporary bookmark type thing. I would kind of try to encourage people to focus on it being more for articles and stories that you want to read because it also lets you kind of curate your own area. And if you have friends that use the service, you can kind of share things with them too. So like if I have something that I'm reading and then I favorite it, for example, I put like a little heart on it. I think it actually will send it. You can make it so that it sends it to Twitter or your Facebook page.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like other people can also, and other people that use Instapaper can also see it as something that you enjoyed and they'll, it's a good way to share things with people. And it's not loud. It's not noisy. It's not gaudy and decadent. And
it's well thought really, out.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very simple, and it's very effective, and it's very agile. It feels fast. You know, I can't really. Of course, it feels fast. It's just a. It's a.
It does what it needs to do, and nothing more.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It doesn't feel heavy. It's not. Yes. It's not like a top heavy. Look at all the things I can do. Look at all this crap.
Yeah. It's I think it's in iOS 5, or maybe it was a previous version. Apple introduced their own similar technology and a read later feature.
Well, in Lion.
In Lion. That's what it was. Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if that actually ties in with mobile Safari yet. Does it?
I do believe there in your bookmarks list on mobile Safari, you get a read later bookmarks folder.
I just don't know if that like if it uses iCloud to like make sure that you've got the same read later list or not.
I think it does. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's great. But, you know, for someone like me, I change browsers pretty frequently. I'll use Safari for weeks and then I'll switch to Chrome. Right now, my favorite Chrome extension for Instapaper is called Instachrome, mainly because I can just right click a link and send it to Instapaper from that.
Nice.
And you can read it on any device. Like the Safari read later thing is great if you are all Mac all the time.
Sure.
But you know, if I'm like on a Windows machine or a Unix workstation at the office, I can go to the Instapaper website, log in, and see my stuff.
And I believe Instapaper even has Kindle export or Kindle, some sort of Kindle sync. Yes, where your stuff appears on your Kindle home screen magically.
Yeah, and you can also send stuff through the Kindle texturizer, right? Like there's a way you can actually have, when you're browsing things in the Kindle browser, I think you can send them off to an Instapaper service that then sends them back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure about that, but I
do know that there the guy who wrote Instapaper, Marco Arment, has put a lot of effort into making sure that it works really well on Kindles. He typically buys like every Kindle that comes out and tests it on that. So
it's clearly written and maintained by someone who likes to read.
Yes,
and likes text to be legible. It even handles pagination. Like if you don't want to have it scroll, it'll do like a paging system, which is nice.
Yep.
I love it. It's great software. I think everyone should buy it, if not just to support Marco, but because it's fantastic.
Sure. Yes.
I love it.
Recommended by the Hell Yeah Show.
So you're going to talk about games today.
I am going to talk about games today. That's why the title of the show was Shall We Play a Game? So we talked about TV shows last week. We had our fall TV preview, courtesy of Emery.
For all the new shows. We haven't talked about the returning shows yet.
Oh, right. Yes. but so Emery has his pulse, or has his finger on the pulse of the new TV season. I've got my finger on the pulse of the new video game season.
Yeah.
And if you don't follow video games, you may not realize that there are seasons to it. But typically, a rash of gigantic video games launch right before the Christmas season. Because the holidays are half of the video game industry or something ridiculous like that, right?
Maybe like more. Going into summer and then going into winter, are those the two main ones?
Yeah, so well there's all the games just before the holiday season so that everyone buys them as gifts for the holidays, and then there are all the games that didn't make it out before Christmas. They meant to launch in November or early December at the latest, and then the game took too long to make and they push it to January or February of the next year. So that's another big launch window. And then the third big launch window is right before E3, the big video game exhibition. And so there's a big launch window there, and E3 is in, it's in June, May? I don't remember, but it's around that time of year. So there's three big launch windows. The January one is a little less big because there's typically only a few games each year a few big games that miss their intended release window.
Does any game ever make it out on time? Like, I know that it's kind of like a crap industry like that. No offense, but it's like...
It's hard. Yeah, it's...
Everyone that works in the gaming industry are a bunch of lazy-ass gamers. And they have, like, terrible executive teams, like at Activision.
So here's the thing about the game industry. Typically, actually, the people who work on video games work...
they're abused.
Yes, they work
like
harder. They work longer hours for less pay than people doing similar jobs working on other things. So maybe you're a video game programmer and you are doing the same work you would do if you were not exactly the same work, but you know, say you were a medical systems programmer or a database systems programmer or something like that.
Sure.
You make less money and you work longer hours because you're working in the video game industry.
It's a horrible environment. Like, I know some of the people that work over at Valve. Like,
Valve is fantastic, though.
they have nothing but nice things to say about working there, but, like, they are all, like, most people that work there are, you know, refugees from other places.
Right, yeah.
They're constantly crapped on all their
career.
The big
development houses, the EA, Activision, are typically... They're software mills. It's
and then they buy up all other, you know, other companies and other properties to acquire trademarks and copyrights, and then end up like bagging everybody out. Like, I mean, I think like Blizzard and Valve, and who else is someone that doesn't suck?
Blizzard, Valve. I mean, there's a bunch of indie developers out there now that are doing good work in small teams because that's possible now with digital distribution. Other people that don't suck. There's Double Fine. Double Fine Studios, Tim Schafer's development studio. They're not a publisher though. They just make games. EA is sucking less as of late. They bought BioWare, and BioWare's put out some good games. But anyway, but the industry as a whole tends to miss release windows often or push back games release dates often just because the process is such a hard one that involves everyone on the team working very hard and working super long hours right before release in crunch time, which results in typically scattered ability to actually release on time, right? So with that all out of the way, that's an explanation of why there are a bunch of really big games coming out right now. There's a big holiday push right now. So there are a lot of big games coming out, and I'm going to separate them like Emery separated TV shows here. there's the good, basically guaranteed awesome, buy it, no issues, you will buy it, you will have fun. There's the too soon to tell, which is kind of you might like it, you might not, and who knows what it's really going to be. And then there's these will probably suck, or we already know that they suck, right?
The Tim Allen selection.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. So in the good category, starting off here, NBA 2K12 came out last week, and this is actually not a really big game, but I'm mentioning it here because I have sunk a lot of hours into this since it came out. Playing with friends, it is even if you understand nothing about basketball, this game is so much fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like Madden.
It does have all of the, if you want to get into it, it's got all of the complicated rule sets and all of the minutia of the game.
But you can also go like an NBA Jam mode and like
not quite NBA Jam, but if you just want to pick it up and play it with friends, it's so much fun. And it really does. It's got those basketball like finishes where it comes down to the wire, you're in the last 30 seconds and you can tie the game. All that stuff happens.
Is there a special move?
Unfortunately, no.
The scorpion get to like shoot a like say come over here, get over here, and throws a spear at him.
There is a lot of content in the game, but nothing like that, unfortunately. But really well done, and it's going to be the only basketball this year. There's probably going to be no NBA basketball on TV because the players can't come to agreement with the league and the teams on their payment. This will be all the basketball you can handle this year.
By the way, can I just say that I'm fine with that? And I think that the owners, who are idiots to hire people for millions and millions of dollars, painted themselves into this corner. And I hope that they all go down in flames.
All right. Okay, next up. This came out this week. Batman Arkham City. It's a follow-up to Batman Arkham Asylum, I think 2009 release. And so comic book games are generally terrible.
Better than movie games, though, right?
But a little bit, sometimes. As a whole, like they're typically never result in a good game. But Batman Arkham Asylum, the first of this Batman series, what has now become a series, was actually an amazing game. It was a contender for Game of the Year that year. It was really, really well done. And it's got Batman. So what could go wrong?
Who does the voice acting for Batman?
Oh, I don't actually know. I'm not sure.
Is he all raspy?
He's sort of raspy, but he's not Dark Knight level of... voice. I'm trying to Google this real quick. He's not raspy in the Dark Knight sense, but
no Christian Bale.
Kevin Conroy.
Oh, okay.
And Mark Hamill does the Joker. Actually, I know, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, at least in Arkham Asylum. I don't actually know if that's the case in Arkham City, the new one here. But Arkham City is supposed to be more open world. You can actually fly around Gotham City with your cape and whatnot and explore this big open city and then go into buildings and do the stuff you did in Arkham Asylum. This game is a clear winner. It's already come out, so there's already been some reviews on it. And there's no way this is going to be a bad game. If you buy this, you will like it. So.
Can you tell us as you're going along, like what platform they're being released on?
Yeah, sure. So this is NBA 2K12 is on everything: Xbox 360, PS3, and PC. Batman Arkham City, the PC release, unfortunately, is pushed back until 2012, so you can only get it on PS3 and Xbox 360 right now. I'm waiting for the PC release myself. But
all right.
Uncharted 3 is the next one.
I'm super
here.
Psyched about this.
Yeah. So this is only on PlayStation 3.
I never played any of the original ones though.
You didn't play Uncharted 2?
No.
Wow. You should pick that up. It's probably pretty cheap now.
Okay.
So,
and, you know, my rule of only buying used games for PS3.
Yeah, it's probably extremely cheap used. So.
Okay.
And there's probably a lot of copies out there, too. Very popular game. So Uncharted 1 was not that notable. It was a good game, but no one really noticed it, and it wasn't amazing. Uncharted 2 was incredible. People loved it. It won Game of the Year for many different review sites and whatnot. It was amazing both for the gameplay itself and just the things that game did graphically had not been seen. Some of the things it did had not been seen before anywhere. Putting you on a moving train and letting you throw grenades back and forth. That stuff is really hard to do. And they did it. And Uncharted 3 is going to be even more amazing in that direction. There's an incredible scene where you are on a sinking ship that is filling with water, which is all dynamically managed, and the ship flips over.
So it's not pre-rendered. Like, this is all stuff that's happening.
This is, yeah. It looks, the game looks like a movie, Uncharted 2 looks like a movie for all of its 8 or 9 hours you're playing through it, but you are interacting with it at almost every step of the way.
So. Are these like action games or adventure games? Like, how would you?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So the whole Uncharted series is kind of is like an action third person shooter, right? So a few platforming things, a few puzzles where you're a few spatial puzzles where you're putting block or massive stone sculptures into place, and that's opening a doorway or something. But then the main gameplay is you're shooting dudes in third person. So, and going back, Batman Arkham City is a melee brawler for the most part, but with some open world stuff in Arkham City. But most of the gameplay there is, well, you're stealthing around, you're using various gadgets, and then you are melee combat one on one with the enemies. So, okay, moving on here. The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. Did you ever play Oblivion? The Elder Scrolls
for 4? The Xbox?
For anything. It came out on everything.
Yeah, I think I played it on the original Xbox.
Oh,
right?
That would have been Morrowind. The one before that. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't played Elder Scrolls.
So Oblivion was one of the early games on the PS3 and Xbox 360, as well as on the PC, but it wasn't an early game there. And it was incredible, massive open world, classic fantasy setting, great graphics, lots of stuff you can do. Like, people can spend 100 hours in Oblivion easily, right? There's so much stuff you can do. Elder Scrolls V Skyrim is going to be the same type of thing with some noticeable improvements. It's going to be, if you enjoyed Oblivion, if you enjoy RPGs that let you do whatever you want, this game is for you. If you want to become a thief and steal everything from all the stores and then join the Thieves Guild, you can do that. If you want to be the majestic hero who upholds justice throughout the land, you can do that. It's very dynamic systems. So what you do has an effect on the world in some subtle but important ways throughout the game. And should be really interesting. RPG game with first person both magic and melee combat mechanics. So, but primarily an RPG. Can't go wrong with Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. And my final can't go wrong game, this is a bit of an outlier, but Saints Row the Third. This game is just going to be ridiculous. go watch a trailer for this game. And you'll understand what I mean. It's going to be over the top. You're part of a crime society where you guys basically own the world. So you've got unlimited private jets and you've got unlimited weaponry and everything. And you're just going to have fun with things. You're going to dress up as cops and rob grocery stores. You're going to, you're going to do crazy stuff that the game lets you do that's just going to be ridiculous and fun, and at the end of the day, not all that profound or interesting from a gameplay perspective, but like the actions themselves would be ridiculous, just plain fun. So, good stuff there. Okay.
I got to check that out. I actually haven't heard about that.
Yeah. The previous one, the Saints Row 2, it's sort of like Grand Theft Auto, right? But where Grand Theft Auto gates you into sort of, here's the way you kind of are supposed to play this game, and there's a story you've got to go through, and you've got to follow some rules to the police are going to get on you if you start shooting people, right? Saints Row just lets you do whatever you want. So
nice.
Yeah. Okay, the too soon to tell category. A couple games here. Forza 4, racing game. Sequel to Forza 3, right? The problem here is that Forza 3 was everything you would ever want out of a racing game. And Forza 4 doesn't add all that much on top of Forza 3. It's still
is it real
pretty
cars?
Much... what's that?
Is it real cars?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's all real cars.
I hate the games that are like, you're now driving the City Vision 5.
It is all real licensed cars. They actually have Jeremy Clarkson from Top Gear. Doing voiceovers where you can walk around a car and get into it and look at all the instrumentation and all that.
Sold.
And he gives you a little voiceover about it. So
that's great.
But again, Forza 4, not that much of an improvement over Forza 3. So who knows how good that's actually going to be. It's already out, though, so there's some reviews out there if you want to read them.
I'll check that out.
Battlefield 3. So there's two big first-person shooters this holiday season. There's Battlefield 3, or military first-person shooters, I should say. Battlefield 3 and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 is going to suck. Battlefield 3 might be okay.
Now, wasn't I'll wait until we get to Call of Duty.
But, okay. So Battlefield 3 is the new Battlefield game. Typically, they're very, very large open environments, very tactical. Typically, more of the PC style first person shooter as opposed to the console style first person shooter, right? But Battlefield 3 has got some weird stuff. You actually launch the game through a web browser, and it requires you have EA's Origin software installed on your computer. It's unfortunate in a few ways, but the gameplay itself seems pretty good, seems pretty solid. So if you're not tired of military first-person shooters at this point, it could be a good game for you to play. You could enjoy it, but I'm pretty tired of military first-person shooters at this point. So,
yeah, they're not really great, are they?
They're very, at this point, they're all very similar, and there are a whole lot of them out there. So,
yeah,
because Call of Duty Modern Warfare has done very well for itself, and other people want to copy that. So, I'd like to see a lot more. I'd like to see games differentiate themselves more. And Battlefield may. It's definitely got some more tactical, a more tactical feel to it, and more open. And as I said, it's more of a Battlefield game as previous Battlefield games have been. So, and then Assassin's Creed Revelations. This is instead of Assassin's Creed 3. There was an Assassin's Creed 2, and they've sort of continued to produce these add-ons to Assassin's Creed 2 story, rather than move to an entirely new character, which they'll do in Assassin's Creed 3. So I'm kind of just waiting for Assassin's Creed 3 at this point. Assassin's Creed Revelations doesn't excite me all that much, so because it's more or less what we've seen in the previous Assassin's Creed 2 generation games, as far as I can tell, but who really knows? Too soon to tell. Okay, these suck. Here we go. I won't spend too much time on these because they suck and you should ignore them. Rage is another kind of typical first-person shooter type thing with some vehicle combat, but the setting is super generic. It's post-apocalyptic. There's a lot of burned-out buildings. It looks like a lot of other games, so not that excited about that. Rocksmith is promising to redefine the music game genre by letting you play a real guitar while you do your music game. So it's like Rock Band or Guitar Hero, but with a real guitar. Right?
So it's just like playing a real guitar.
Yeah, ignore it. Go learn how to play a real guitar. And play that.
Sure.
And then Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 is going to be Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 with a few additional things if you really like that. And Call of Duty Black Ops came in between those two. If you really like those games, sure. Continue to play this with your bros on the Xbox. But it's not inventive or interesting or original gameplay. It's going to get more ridiculous. I think there's aliens involved at this point. But it's not going to be that interesting from a gameplay or a setting perspective. So I won't play it.
Yeah.
But you wanted to ask something about Call of Duty, or
so? Yeah, wasn't there like some how did that franchise get moved? Like it was like acquired by somebody else, and then they fired everybody, and there was some drama about this.
The Call of Duty Modern Warfare segment of Call of Duty, as far as I know, has been with Activision for quite a while. But Call of Duty Modern Warfare, there's a developer for Activision called what are they called? There's a subsidiary developer of Activision that works on Call of Duty Modern Warfare, and they produced Modern Warfare 2, which was a huge hit because it did all these sort of progressive, you would earn persistent points in multiplayer that would enhance your character and all this stuff. And so it was a really, really hot game, sold a ridiculous number of copies, and they apparently were a little stingy on paying out royalties to the developers. So the...
Get out.
Yeah, so the Activision, how stingy? What? Yeah. So the lead the leads of this studio ended up leaving the studio, and there's a whole legal battle that's happening now. But the Activision still owns the Call of Duty Modern Warfare moniker, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 is still being made by Activision. So it's just there was a big ado, a big legal ado about that franchise. Continues to be a big legal ado. So, and the final game here that will probably suck is Star Wars The Old Republic.
You're breaking my heart.
I know. This is an MMO. It's made by BioWare, and BioWare are fantastic.
The Knights of the Old Republic games were fantastic.
They were great. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they are saying it will be the first fully voiced MMO. So you'll have voice acting for all the quests and whatnot. But the problem is, when you get to the fundamental gameplay of it, it's basically World of Warcraft.
Sure. Nothing wrong with that.
It's the tank, DPS, healer, triad. It's pushing. I push button and action happens in the next global cooldown cycle. Right, which is, in my opinion, kills its chances to be a runaway success.
How so?
Because at the end of the day, if people want to play World of Warcraft, they're going to play World of Warcraft. Like, that is World of Warcraft,
lightsabers and Jedi stuff.
Well, World of Warcraft is its own genre at this point, and this is doing a Star Wars game in the World of Warcraft genre could be fun, but it's not going to. It's not going to be defining. It's not going to be the, wow, this is the next MMO that everyone needs to go play, right?
Okay, I can see. Yeah. I mean, they said, I think I read an article today that if they get like 500,000 subscribers for it, it's like that's making them a lot of money. And if they get like even a million, that's like a huge success for them.
Yep. Yeah, and EA has put a lot into this game. BioWare has put a whole lot into this game. And I'm sure it will be good. I'm sure it will be quality. It's just not going to be that next generation MMO that everyone's looking for of what is going to redefine the MMO experience and be the next World of Warcraft, the next thing that everyone has to check out, has to play, becomes a cultural icon, that sort of thing. It's just not going to do that. So,
do you think Diablo 3 can?
I don't think Diablo 3 is targeting the same space. I don't think it's targeting the MMO space.
That's true. It is a little more more action-y than... Yeah. Although, you know, like the end game stuff in World of Warcraft is the same time. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there will eventually be something that redefines how we think about an MMO, right? That'll be like, oh, wow, this is massively multiplayer and it's online, but it's not World of Warcraft, right?
Yeah, I mean, like Rift hasn't done it.
No. Well, Rift was basically World of Warcraft.
Aeon, which is basically World of Warcraft, but a little bit harder.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Old Republic, from a gameplay perspective, will basically be it's the same things you've done in World of Warcraft, but you'll do them in the Star Wars universe. Which
you know that could still be successful.
Oh yeah, that'll be fun. It's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the game you'd pick up and play for several months, maybe a year. It won't have God, I've had my WoW subscription since forever, right?
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, there is a big difference there.
Yep, yep. All right, and that is the fall video game preview. So,
that was great.
Yeah, thanks. I could talk at length about any one of these games, but hopefully I was able to give a sort of quick overall summary of what you should buy and what you shouldn't this holiday
season. I
kind of
like the Rage demo for the iPad.
On the iPad, Rage may be pretty cool.
Great.
I forgot to say the platforms here, but I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put all the platforms for each game. Yeah. But Rage, I'm talking about the Rage for PS3, Xbox, and PC. So
yeah, I don't like first person shooters at all on the console. The only console I can tolerate them on is the Wii.
Really? Oh wow.
Yeah. Because I the Call of Duty with the zombies, Black Ops.
Yeah.
No. What's the name of that game?
I don't even know. I don't know.
It's something Black Ops. I mean, there is a
Call of Duty Black Ops. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if the Wii version is different.
That's fun to play on the Wii because the Wiimote is really good for that. But I hate playing a first-person shooter with a gamepad.
Huh.
I cannot do it. If I don't have a keyboard and a mouse or a Wiimote, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I cannot control any of it. I have a really hard time playing Bioshock, and I love that game.
Right. Yeah, Well, that's, you know, that's why a lot of these games, or a lot of first-person shooters, I just recommend playing on the PC. Certainly, Battlefield 3, the place to buy that is on the PC. Even though you got to deal with all of EA's ridiculous Origin stuff and web browser stuff, the place to buy that is on the PC. So
you can contact us.
Yes.
Email. show@hellyeah.com and on the web at show.hellyeah.com and on the Twitter machine at hellyeahshow.
Twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Mm-hmm. And that'll do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. We'll see you in a week.
See ya.